Stockholm, Paris, Berlin, Kiev, Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Warsaw, Bucharest, 2-1. Hello and welcome to this edition of Network Europe. I'm Daniela Lazarova. This week, is the French state keeping too close an eye on its citizens? Social changes in the Czech Republic lead to more and bigger Romani ghettos. Polish language media takes off in Ireland, and how Sweden's video game industry is becoming the new television. That and more in today's Network Europe, a partnership of Europe's leading international broadcasters. George Orwell once lived in Paris, but he may not have had it particularly in mind when he wrote 1984 and created the concept of Big Brother keeping watch over citizens. Today, technology is becoming ever more a part of the fabric of ordinary life. At the start of the new school term, the biometrical scanning of pupils' handprints as a way of paying for meals has appeared in more school canteens in France. With computers, mobile phones, chip and PIN payment systems, not to mention surveillance equipment, our movements are being traced and tracked as never before, as Radio France International's Alice Moss reports from Paris.
Smile, you're being watched. We live in a global village that's saturated in technology where security is paramount. Here in France in the 1970s, the revelation that every citizen had been given a secret number under which all their administrative files were stored led to the creation of a public body called CNIL. Their mission, to try and ensure that legally our private lives are not intruded on by information gathering of any kind. Its president, Alex Turk, says the organisation is watching those who are watching us.
Today, the problem we have is tracing an individual. You can trace someone using biometry by geosatellite tracking through video surveillance cameras, etc. For example, with GPS receivers, you can follow someone from a distance. For instance, in the work environment, a company boss can, under certain conditions, follow the movements of one of his workers. He has to tell his employee it must not last all day, and there must be a justifiable reason for doing it. But of course, there is a difference between following someone to see if he's lunching with a certain lady at noon and making sure that a delivery can be in such and such a place during the working day to limit travel time.
Spying, c'est de l'espionnage, non?
No, if you want someone and it's linked to your movements in your professional life, and as long as you always have the possibility of breaking that link, then it's not spying. On the other hand, if you don't tell someone you're doing it and you do it to watch what that individual is doing in their private life, that is spying.
Has there ever been a case where you have advised very strongly against the use of this equipment because you've considered it too intrusive?
Yes. To give you an example, an insurance company suggested a system where, in exchange for a 40% reduction in their insurance premium, young drivers would have had to have agreed to be followed by a GPS receiver. But we thought that consent given by a young person who is offered a 40% cut in price was no longer consent clearly and freely given, because that individual is under financial pressure and says, I'm going to do this to save 40%.
If we use a credit card or buy something online, our movements are recorded and information is shared, often for commercial purposes. But, says Jean-Pierre Dubois of the French Human Rights League, there are other national databases that are more disturbing.
Like the National Database for Genetic Prints and so on. Police officers created a huge database we call the STIC, and there is no judicial control. And in that database, you can enter very easily, because you enter not only if you are suspected of committing a felony or a crime, but if you are a victim and if you are a witness, you are in the database.
Records of telephone calls are kept for 6 months in France. It could be just a wrong number, but as the content of a call is not logged, only the connection is. So if a member of a criminal gang calls you by accident, that contact will be logged. Computer logs from databases which store such information, says Jean-Pierre Dubois, is wrongly believed to be fail-safe.
We had that in a very important terrorist case, the Chalabi case, a huge mass case 5 years ago. They arrested a lot of people, about the idea of an Islamic plot with terrorist actions and so on. About 250 people stayed in jail for 2, 3, or 4 years, which is very long, before being judged, I mean, which is incredible. And in numerous cases, I would say a dozen cases, if I remember well, something like that, you had only for evidence you were at the same restaurant as a terrorist was at the same moment of the same day.
During the next year or so, electronic ID cards are being phased in here in France. Lawyer and human rights campaigner Jean-Pierre Dubois again.
Our concern is that the identity card in the electronic version will be enriched. The police will have instant access to a lot of things about your personal life.
All things considered, is there really such a thing as a private life anymore? Could I walk in Paris from the office to the metro for a 30-second period without being filmed or tracked in some way?
Today in France, yes, thank God, you will still go 30 minutes without being tracked, but obviously that's being chipped away, and a lot depends on exactly where you are, of course. But in a capital like Paris, it's still possible to walk in a street without being watched electronically. It's true there is some pressure on us to move towards the model of other countries. We are not there yet, but times are changing.
Alex Turk of CNIL. Whether we like it or not, Big Brother has come to stay. For Network Europe, this is Alice Moss in Paris.
Europe's Roma often live on the margins of society, suffering a variety of problems, from high unemployment to relatively low life expectancy. In the Czech Republic, a new report highlights what seems to be a disturbing trend, the creation of Roma ghettos. The study, ordered by a Czech government ministry, shows that more and more Romanis in the Czech Republic are finding themselves literally living on the edge of society. Radio Prague's Rob Cameron reports.
Romani rapper Gypsy, a hip-hop artist who articulates the problems and frustrations of life for the Czech Republic's large Roma minority. His clothes and music are a conscious emulation of black American rappers, but when he sings about Romani's living life in the ghetto, he really is telling it like it is. Life of the Roma ain't easy, free as a bird, but never be easy. More and more Romanis are finding themselves pushed to the very margins of Czech society. The country's Labour and Social Affairs Ministry has just published the most in-depth study ever into what sociologists call social exclusion, in other words, the creation of ghettos. And the results do not make pleasant reading. The study was overseen by the leading sociologist Ivan Gabal.
Czech society and economy undergo a huge transformation, privatization of housing, restructuring of labor force, and in all that advancing processes, Roma minority remain backward. So the relative distance between Roma minority and Czech majority society increased.
Ivan Gabal says his teams of sociologists found a total of 310 neighbourhoods inhabited almost exclusively by Romanis, usually run-down housing estates or ramshackle buildings on the edge of town. The study put the total population of these areas at 80,000. That's around a third of the country's total Roma population. But the most alarming fact was that the number of ghettos is growing. One person who isn't surprised at the study's findings is Gabriela Hrabanova, director of the Roma student organization Atinganoi.
It's terrible, but what people were thinking that the kind of analysis will show. Because we, working in this kind of sector, the non-governmental sector dealing with the Romani issue, we facing this fact, you know, every day. In fact, I'm happy that this analysis get out, because now it's on the paper. And it's showing the fact with the graphs, and people can understand more than the situation is really bad.
The study says the ghettos exert a powerful gravitational force. They tend to suck in poor families living on their margins. The bigger the ghetto, the more powerful the force. Inside the ghettos, researchers found communities blighted by substandard housing, poor health, and high unemployment. Between 95 and 100% of the inhabitants were out of work. It's a vicious circle. poor, badly educated kids growing up into poor, badly educated adults, who then have more poor, badly educated kids. Ivan Gabal says the Czech education system, wittingly or unwittingly, plays a major role in perpetuating the problem.
Czech schools are simply legitimizing deficit of cultural and educational capital in the background. This is what we have to change. Czech elementary school has to be able to resupply insufficient educational background. This is not current situation. There has to be a lot of done on this field.
So how can the situation be improved? Čestmír Sajda from the Labour and Social Affairs Ministry says the study, the first complete map of Roma exclusion, is an important first step.
I think that every problem you have is serious, but I don't think that the problem of Roma population is the biggest problem in our country, but of course we have to solve these problems and we would like to solve it. That's why we started to make proper analysis to know the situation, which is now okay, because we now fulfilled this target. And the second is how or what instruments are effective to diminish the social exclusion.
As for concrete proposals, they vary from reforming the education system to introducing positive discrimination in the labour market. Such ideas are likely to meet with a hostile reaction among politicians and the Czech public, who on the whole have little patience or understanding for the Roma minority. Atenganoi's Gabriela Harabanova concedes there are no easy solutions, but change, she says, must start at a grassroots level, and that means the local authorities.
The responsibility of changing the situation is lying on the local governmental representatives. They are the one responsible for their region, and they are the one who actually sending Roma out of the cities or even to the different regions, so they don't need to deal with that anymore. And we can see it from the past 2 years, it was really happening.
That report by Radio Prague's Rob Cameron. As one of three countries to open its doors immediately to workers from the new EU states in 2004, Ireland has seen a large influx of Polish immigrants over the last couple of years. In fact, the Polish community is the fastest growing immigrant group in Ireland. As a result, not just Irish companies, but the mainstream media are focusing ever more attention on young, dynamic Poles, who they regard as an attractive target group. Newspapers like the Evening Herald and the Irish Times print several pages in Polish at least once a week, while some TV channels are now broadcasting in the language. Radio Polonia's Iwona Lehmann reports on one such station and speaks to its main Polish presenter.
City Channel came up with a program that is half in Polish, as not more than 50% of the Poles speak fluent English. Izabela Chudzicka became the channel's face to cover both political or economic issues as well as social matters and cultural events on the Oto Polska of This is Poland show.
Local television for Dublin. Lively, informative, entertaining.
It was very good to do something in Polish language to show that Ireland is becoming very quickly right now a very cosmopolitan country, and I think they want to actually do something for us. They like us. Ireland is one of those countries when Polish people should feel very comfortable in. It's very difficult to find an Irish person who would say something bad about the Poles. We are being considered are very hardworking, very similar to them in a way. We socialize in the same way, etc. It is working. The first few months, I wasn't too sure how it was going to develop. When I was talking to the director of the television station, we were saying, listen, we see first 2-3 months how it works. You know, it has been a year and something, and it's still going strong, so fingers crossed.
5 years have already passed since Izabela Chudzicka arrived in Dublin. Having met many Irish people in her job in a bank in Poland, she decided to leave her little town of Ząbkowice Śląskie in the south for an adventure in Ireland. The plan was to stay for just a few months. She could speak proper English only after a few pints of Guinness and started as a salesperson in a drugstore, then became a waitress just like many other foreigners on the arrival in a new country. But she worked hard.
At the beginning, I was quite lucky because I came over and I knew some Irish people already. They helped me to settle. Then I started going out with an Irish guy, which helped a lot because you know the society quite well. You stick to Irish family kind of thing. So for almost 3.5 years, I didn't even think about moving back because work was here. I got a job quite quickly and then personal life was here as well. For me, the whole experience was just a new adventure. So the first few weeks were great. I felt like on holidays, because I was going to English language school. Then after a few weeks, I got bored and I said, okay, I have to get back and start working, obviously. So I get a part-time job on the top of the college. Then when I finished college and I thought my English was good enough to come back to an office work, actually the language school that I was studying in gave me a job in administration and I was kind of administrative assistant/secretary.
Now, Izabela Chudzicka, a young woman with unmissable Slav features who had some experience with local TV in Poland, has already turned into one of the most promising presenters of Dublin City Channel, says Vanessa Kaminski, the head producer.
She's part of the family, really. We have a very good friendship. We're very happy to work with her. She's a very talented young lady. She really made herself here in Ireland. And since she started doing Otopolska, she has become a celebrity here. We've seen on every poster and every magazine. She has become a household name, and you couldn't think of not being part of the Irish celebrity circuit at this stage. So we're very, very happy with her.
City Channel is a strong mix of lifestyle entertainment and information programs that appeal to local audiences. Izabela Chudzicka's Otopolska, or This is Poland, is co-produced by the most popular Polish news magazine Wiadomości.
That report by Ivona Lehmann of Radio Polonia. Spanish authorities are demanding help from the European Union, saying they're overwhelmed with the 20,000 African migrants who've reached the shores of Spain's Canary Islands off the coast of Morocco this year. Those who've survived the perilous trip in crowded open-top fishing boats are seeking work in Europe in a bid to flee poverty in countries such as Senegal, Mali, Guinea and the Ivory Coast. But on another European island, a very different kind of African migration has been taking place over the past 10 years. For about 7 months out of the year, Senegalese beach vendors comb the beaches of Sardinia, selling clothing and accessories to sunbathing tourists and sending their earnings back home. Deutsche Welle's Alexa Dvorsen has this radio postcard from the Italian island north of Sicily.
On the eastern coast of Sardinia, the relaxed town of Calagenone spreads comfortably at the bottom of a road that corkscrews around jagged limestone cliffs and ends at the warm turquoise waters of the Mediterranean. As in other beach communities, the souvenir shops, espresso bars, and lively pizzerias cater to a steady flow of tourists in the summer season that's winding down this month. I was just leaving the Calagenone post office after buying some stamps for postcards when a 40-ish man from Senegal approached me and asked me if I could help him fill out a form. He was in line to send a moneygram to his daughter back home. Although he spoke Italian fluently, he must have felt uncomfortable with a pen. I was baffled but didn't want to embarrass him by asking if he was illiterate. His last name was Sar, a name as common as Miller or Jones in Senegal. As I took the pen to write S-A-R-R on the moneygram for him, it struck me how many of us take literacy for granted when a majority in many African countries can't read or write. Then again, Mr. Sar doesn't really need to master handwriting as a beach vendor, though he can clearly read numbers. He's certainly not alone. Pick almost any one of the 200 stunning beaches photographed on the map that's taped to the door of the grocery store, and it's only a few minutes before you'll spot the tall Senegalese men in their bright print fabrics wending their way through troops of European sunbathers parked in the sand. Each one carries a couple of duffel bags, a rucksack, and hangers draped with scarves, shawls, T-shirts, trousers, sunglasses, caps, and visors for sale. It seems much too hot to shop, much less traipse across the sand loaded with luggage. But the vendors have a captive audience as they trudge from one end of the beach to the other. Their long, exhausting walks eventually pay off. Many of the vendors have legal residence permits in Italy. Some of them don't. Either way, they're on friendly terms with the locals, who respect the Senegalese for living modestly to send home as much money as they can. Back at the post office, Mr. Sar submitted the moneygram with €60 cash he carefully unfolded from his wallet. Thanks to modern technology, his daughter would be able to collect the money in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, that same afternoon, once he called her on his cell phone and gave her the code number on the transaction slip. The average tourist in Sardinia could easily spend 60 euros, about $75, in a single day. But in West African currency, that's enough to feed a family of five for a month. Given Senegal's high jobless rate, it's not hard to understand why the Senegalese fan out on almost every beach in Sardinia to sell their wares. People back home are depending on them. When darkness falls and tourists stroll along the harbor after dinner, the vendors set up tables with African masks, along with knickknacks from Kenya, clothing and drums from Senegal, jewelry from India, and fake Gucci bags from China. I asked a few Senegalese if they'd been following the story of their compatriots setting out in overpacked fishing boats bound for the Canary Islands, many of which take off from northern Senegal. Yes, they knew all about it. Hundreds have drowned, I said. Why do they keep leaving when they know how dangerous it is? Are people talking about it back home? Without papers, they won't be allowed to stay in Europe, even if they make it. They don't see the danger, one of the vendors replied calmly. They know it's a risk, but when they step onto that boat, all they see is their future. They want to find work so they can survive and help their families. That's all they're thinking about. I had to admit I knew what he meant. I'd been to his country several times, and when young Senegalese see how often emigres return from Europe with enough money to buy a piece of property and build a house, it's no wonder that's all they're thinking about when they push off from African shores. So if any of the migrants are allowed to stay in Europe, some of them will no doubt find their way to the beaches of Sardinia. They'll join the ranks of the beach vendors selling shawls and trinkets to pay for the next moneygram to send back home.
That radio postcard by Deutsche Welle's Alexa Dvorsen. Just a reminder that you're listening to Network Europe with me, Daniela Lazarova. Now it's time for our regular briefing from Brussels, which comes, as usual, from Stephen Castle.
Even in Brussels, it's not often that a speech on the future of Europe can pack one of the city's most prestigious halls. But a lecture given by France's interior minister here attracted so many diplomats and officials that many were crammed into a balcony above the speaker. There again, Nicolas Sarkozy is not just any French minister. The charismatic centre-right politician also happens to be a main contender for his country's top job. With presidential elections looming next April and May, opinion polls show Monsieur Sarkozy to be ahead of his likely challenger from the centre-left, Ségolène Royal. For the EU, what Monsieur Sarkozy thinks is important not just because of the job he stands to win, but also because of the country he wants to lead. France will hold the EU's rotating presidency at a crucial juncture in 2008, when key decisions have to be taken. More important, it's France that created the biggest roadblock to the European Constitution. Its referendum no vote last year halted the Constitution in its tracks, and Monsieur Sarkozy was emphatic that the text rejected by French voters cannot go back to them. But if that disappointed some of his audience, what Monsieur Sarkozy added will have delighted many other Europhiles. His plan is for a scaled-down treaty replacing the Constitution to be negotiated and ratified within 2 years. This would include many of the key elements of the old text, including changes to the voting system, a reduction of national vetoes, creation of a permanent president of the European Council and of a European foreign minister. Nor did he stop there. Radical ideas for the future included revolutionary new powers for the European Commission president to select his own team of commissioners. At the end of the lecture, one question remained. The future of Europe isn't the most vote-grabbing subject, so why is Monsieur Sarkozy so keen to talk about it? The first reason is that he's planning a way out of France's European problem. By arguing for a mini-constitution in the campaign for the presidential elections, Monsieur Sarkozy can, if he wins, claim to have a mandate for agreeing one. And that means he can avoid holding another referendum, one which he might well lose. The second reason is more to do with low politics. Europe splits France's socialist opposition, and Monsieur Sarkozy's speech put his likely challenger, Ségolène Royal, on the spot. French journalists spent much of this week trying to probe her views on the EU. As it happened, she's been visiting Brussels too, but left without giving a press conference, let alone a speech. This is Stephen Castle in Brussels.
And finally today, Sweden's TV and computer game industry raked in ₱1 billion last year, and 98% of that was thanks to exports. The film and music industries better watch out, because that statistic means games are fast becoming Sweden's cash cow. Radio Sweden International's Gabby Katz has been looking into this booming industry in Stockholm.
Grin is a Sweden-based game developer. They're the people behind a host of arcade machines, military and civilian simulators, as well as award-winning games like Ballistics.
There's several big challenges. You have to look at this in steps. The first one is obviously just getting the contract. But once you're in development, I think it's the hardest thing nowadays is to get the gameplay right. You know, what is fun? Because games are so complex today. I mean, graphics and, you know, technology back and forth, that's not so complex compared to actually making it fun.
Well, it looked fairly complex. We've just had a walk around your locale here, and you've got about 60, mostly guys, sitting in front of the computers, making the graphics, making sure the game actually works. How often do you come across bugs that you have to then change? I can see you're laughing, a lot.
I mean, if you look at our last project, we had about 5,000 bugs when we considered it done. So you're right, it's a process that requires so many different skills. I have to say it's probably more complex to make a computer game, as it's interactive, than a movie.
And talking about the film industry, statistics have just come out that say the Swedish gaming industry is hot on the heels of not only the Swedish film industry, but also the music industry.
I wouldn't be surprised, because I've seen it for a long time. And the thing is, I've seen people start playing games at about 10 years old, and they don't stop. It's a growing community, you know, because people are becoming more technically competent and introduced to the games at an early age.
Why do you think Sweden is doing so well when it comes to gaming?
In terms of developing games, I think it's because we started quite early with like the Amiga and Atari, and we did a lot of demoing and stuff like that. It was more like a community to demonstrate how cool technology demos you can do and graphics you could do. And that started quite early. So I think we have to thank the hobbyists and the community for that.
We've established that Sweden is doing very well internationally, but it's still, of course, not quite in the same league as the United States. What do you think it would take to push Sweden that little bit further along?
What I think to challenge the American developers, because that's where I see the challenge, is a better understanding of what do the American public like. Because we're still a bit European. We're listening to the Japanese quite a bit, you know, it's closer. We still need to understand more what actually speaks to the American heart.
Grin CEO Bo Andersson, and another expert who agrees Sweden is climbing the ladder to gaming success. That's Mats Nylund, editor at the magazine Superplay, circulation 20,000.
There are more and more programs at the universities for game design, and more and more people are getting interested in it. And we're also seeing at least 3 or 4 major game developers in Sweden are very successful, and there's more coming, I'm sure.
But the bottom line, could anyone imagine going back to a gameless cyberspace?
Oh, no. I mean, computer games to me is like, it's TV, right? It's the new TV.
Thanks to Gabby Katz for that report, which brings us to the end of this edition of Network Europe. The programme is a partnership of Radio France International, Radio Sweden, Radio Polonia, Deutsche Welle, Radio Netherlands, Radio Romania International, Radio Slovakia, Radio Prague, Radio Ukraine and Radio Slovenia. Find us online at www.networkeurope.org, where you can also email us your comments and questions. But for now, on behalf of our pan-European team, I'm Danielle Lazarova saying goodbye and thanks for listening. We leave you this week with a song by the foremost Czech hip-hop group. They're called Peneti Strička Homboje, or PSH for short, and this is Du Dolu.
bylo fajn a dneska jsem fakt v píči. Včera jsem pevně stál a dneska čelím krizi. Příběh číslo jedna, vidím ho teď, jak kdyby byl včera. Beru devět od anděla, jedu jak střela. Nechám se unášet proudem pryč. Radši pospíchám, nějak cítit zádech bič. Vystoupím hlavní nádraží, Sherwood styl. Proklestím cestu dál, rád bych byl. U vlaku včas, tak to mám rád. Ale těsně před halou, někdo s blbou náladou a blbou větou. Čtyřikrát bombí svoji ženskou. Kurva kámo, to nemám rád. Raz, dva, tři, čtyři kroky, jsem u tebe a už jí máš. Letíš k zemi dolů hned, dostáváš partu dalších tvrdých ran hned. Teď dostaneš, kurva, teď ti dám lekci, jak se chovat k dámám. Dostávám praps, říkám, není zač, na svých nohou stojím pevně, já jsem v klidu, můžu ochránit sám sebe, aha, ale tebe jebe můj styl. Já přesto cítím, že nebe není pro mě pořád víc a víc. Vidím, jak scházím, jeli jsme spolu, nahoru, dolů, jeden tým, teď se ti pořád vzdaluju.
Já furt s ním jsem tím,
co jsme byli. Nevidím nic, přichází tma, jsem v ní sám.
A kde jsem já?
Seš pryč, já jdu dolů, furt hloub. Se svojí hlavou nahulenou a s tou vodkou. Z Mejranu odcházím pozdějc, než bych měl. Když jdu městem, využívám všemožných skel. K tomu, abych viděl můj ksicht a věděl, že jdu dolů, jdu hloub, jdu sám. Kurva, já jdu dolů, jdu hloub, jdu sám. Já jdu dolů a já jdu hloub. Já jdu sám, kurva, je čas. Já jdu dolů, jdu hloub.